Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. My name is Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. We do appreciate it. Good news, bad news, sad news, all sorts of stuff occurring today. But before we get to the really important stuff, I made a decision today. I am definitely going to invest in voodoo dolls and bags of magic sticks. I'm going to go back to visiting the root lady like I used to do when I was younger. Because apparently curses work. Now, we reported yesterday that an Indonesian anti-Bush hex person used Haitian-style voodoo to put a hex on Bush. And now we learn that 6 of the 8 tires on Air Force One mysteriously blew. Bush's motorcade crashed, and his daughter, Barbara Bush, had her purse snatched in Argentina, in spite of the fact that she had Secret Service protection. And the purse was later recovered untouched. I guess the thief wasn't interested in a dozen shot bottles of grappa and a half-empty box of Trojans. I don't know. You know, go figure. Argentina, huh? And then there's her papa, Daddy Bush, in response to a heavy criticism of his disastrous Iraq policy, or lack thereof. Bush made the announcement today that he will meet personally with Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki next weekend in Jordan. Not in Baghdad. No, 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 no. Our success there is so astonishingly wonderful that they're afraid a sniper might get him. And then after that, Bush apparently is rushing back to Washington to host a summit on malaria. When asked about that upcoming, these upcoming events today, he said, we all know Iraq's going to be hard work, but I'm really looking forward to meeting the malarians. I love their papaya chicken and banana leaf. And returning from his Me Hate You Long Time tour of Indonesia, Bush stopped for a rest in Hawaii before returning to D.C. Bush had a few words to say there about the assassination of Lebanese industry minister Pierre Jamail, before saying to reporters, "Whew, I'll be glad to get back to the United States." He is truly a piece of work, isn't he? Do you know how? Notice how weird it's been lately. What's missing? Something for those of us, that's you and moi, who follow news events and at some point during the day, you know, come on, fess up. You turn on CNN or MSNBC or God forbid Fox, but you're kind of a news junkie. You read the paper. You go online, even though you know you're not supposed to watch the cable news. You go online. You try to sort things. What's missing? Have you noticed what's missing? Think about it. Donald Rumsfeld. Isn't that interesting? He has become a true Orwellian non-person. Couldn't happen to a more deserving mass killer. Oh, man. There was another Hollywood death today. He was 81. And I'm talking about Robert Altman. Richard Corliss, who is film reviewer for Time Magazine, said he was the cranky uncle at Christmas dinner, daring to utter indiscretions about the family members who were trying to talk over his bad manners. He was the eternal renegade, refusing to make feel-good movies of boys' life adventures or simple melodramas, simple anything. For more than 35 years, Robert Altman was the truth-telling leper outside the film industry cathedral. And, of course, most of us know him most of all for the movie and then the TV series MASH. Robert Altman was 81 when he passed away today. What else do we have here? Oh yeah, the triple curse thing that this Indonesian medicine person had put on Bush. Three members of Bush's motorcade crashed on wet pavement during a visit to Hickman Air Force Base in Oahu, Hawaii. One of the officers is in critical condition, the other in serious condition. The third was released from the hospital. Earlier in the day, White House aides, it says here, scrambled to come up with alternative travel arrangements after Air Force One suffered six flat tires upon Bush's arrival in Ho Chi Minh City. This was the other day. A malfunction in the aircraft braking system overheated the tires. And then, of course, Babs Bush, Barbara, had her purse and cell phone stolen. She was in Buenos Aires in the picturesque San Telmo neighborhood. Picturesque. It's where all the bars are. And Secret Service agents were guarding her. Didn't make any difference. First Lady... Pickles. It's Pickles Bush said no comment. We don't comment on the private dealings of our daughters. There was another incident with her Secret Service detail, a Secret Service agent on the advance detail before the Bush twins got there to start drinking the place up. One of the Secret Service agents got into what's called an altercation with someone after a night out and was badly beaten, according to law enforcement officers, or law enforcement reports. What a family, huh? That's the family values crowd, of course. I wonder how Chelsea Clinton is doing. Any police blotter reports on her, Kathy, or is it, no, just these, okay. And what is becoming a story that's becoming all too familiar, on a flight whose destination was Phoenix, a flight that was supposed to depart Minneapolis, six Muslim imams were removed from a U.S. Airways flight at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, and this was yesterday, and questioned by police for several hours before being released. This happened late yesterday evening, so it only hit the news today. The six were among passengers bound for Phoenix around 6:30 p.m. A passenger initially raised concerns about the group through a note that he passed to a flight attendant. And according to a spokesman for U.S. Airways, police were called after the captain and airport security workers asked the men to leave the plane, and the men refused. They were praying. One of the men... And five of these six imams are from Phoenix. One of them said, quote, they took us off the plane, humiliated us in a very disrespectful way, unquote. They were returning from a conference in Minneapolis of the North American Imams Federation. And five of them are from the Phoenix, Tempe, Arizona area. Apparently what happened, three of the imams stood and said their normal evening prayers together on the plane, as Muslims around the world do every day. And the spokesman for this group said he attributed any concerns by passengers or crew to ignorance about Islam. He said, "I never felt bad like that in my life. Never. Six imams, six leaders in this country, six scholars in handcuffs. It's terrible." And Ibrahim Hooper, who's a spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations in D.C., expressed anger. What would happen if six rabbis were handcuffed and taken off a plane because they started to daven on board a flight from Minneapolis to Phoenix? What would happen if six Baptists, preachers, started speaking in tongues as they boarded a flight passing from Minneapolis, St. Paul to Phoenix? What would happen if six Wiccans got on board a plane and started chanting to the god and the goddess? Well, they would probably be taken off in a heartbeat. Never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. And sometimes I get it seems all I have is one. Then you finally see me, my boy's mind. Hey, but I'm just a soul who just tells shots of good.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
You know, I wish I could do that. I wish I could provide a soothing nighttime or bedtime lullaby for other than Molly, but it's not the way it works. Again, I realize the program is kind of chunking along here. We haven't really hit drive yet. I'm still in neutral for some reason. But it just occurred to me when I said about the root lady, you know, voodoo or the root lady, do most of you know what the root lady is? I may have blown over that too fast. I grew up in a neighborhood in Toledo, Ohio, a most unlikely place for there to have been a root lady. At least it seemed that way. And if you don't know, the root lady in our neighborhood is usually a black woman, African-American woman. This was an auntie of one of my school chums who had moved up from somewhere in South Mississippi. She had, or it was a great aunt. You know, they called her auntie, but it was a great aunt. And she's a very old woman. And she moved up from Mississippi and moved into the house down the street from our house where my friend Bruce lived. And Bruce Mathis was his name, no relation to Johnny Mathis. And Bruce, when she moved in, it was almost like he was a little embarrassed, I guess, because she was so old and she looked kind of like a stereotypical mammy. Whereas most of the kids that I grew up with, black kids as well as white kids, tried to look very cool in the 50s, certainly in the mid-50s when we were all in elementary school. And Bruce was a little bit shy about his auntie. But I noticed after, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months, all of a sudden after auntie had moved in, there were an awful lot of people from the neighborhood who started going over to their house. All black folk. White people didn't do that. White people were, you know, just either not invited or not into root medicine. And there'd be a steady stream, mostly older black folks, but occasionally there would be a youngish, maybe 15 or 16-year-old girl who'd go into the house and come out a few minutes later. So I started asking Bruce about the traffic, and he said, well, some of these people come over here for, arthritis or rheumatism medicine. Some of them come over because they miss their period, and especially the young girls who miss a period, and the root lady knows how to make their period come, and on and on and on. And so finally he took me in to meet her because I kept asking questions. And I was pretty scared to meet this old woman, root lady, who, and in the telling of what his auntie did, of course, Bruce made it, you know, he elaborated it, made it sound like she was almost like a witch. So I finally got to go in one time when she was boiling a chicken. She was boiling a chicken. Only the way she boiled the chicken was in the pot upside down and its feet were sticking out. Now, if you've never, so what, Kathy? You've never seen that, have you? We don't fix our chickens with feet on them. But Bruce's auntie had the chicken in there with the feet sticking out. And I came in the kitchen and just was frozen. You know, I'm standing there looking at this chicken feet sticking up out of this pot. It was just boiling away. And the old woman was sitting at the kitchen table with the biggest butcher knife I had ever seen, you know, chopping things up. And I went and looked at what she was chopping. What she was chopping up was the gizzard and you know, all the innards of the chicken. This woman was country as well as being a root lady. So she was chopping all this stuff up that she was going to fry up and make what she called cracklins. Cracklins! And the cracklins consisted of all those parts that good white people threw out. We didn't eat that stuff. Damn! Give me a drumstick. Give me a thigh. What is this? Lizard, gizzards, livers, things. It was horrible. Oh, my God. And I just wanted to run out of there. And of course, but curiosity, you know, when you're of a certain age, you're 9, 10 years old, and you're standing there in the presence of a real root lady, you just kind of suck it up and stand there. So that's what I did. But to this day, 1,000 years later, I can still see those chicken feet sticking up out of that pot from that root lady. And just wondered, and she had a bag of roots. She wore it. It was a little bag. It looked like an old time, I don't know, like in the movies, a bag of tobacco, only it wasn't. It was this nasty looking cotton cloth bag that she had tied around her waist. And every once in a while, she'd reach in there and she'd get something. And she'd take it out, and she'd make this quick move. It'd go from her hand to her mouth. And whatever it was she was getting into in that bag of roots was, it made her happy. I guess it made her happy. But I'll be damned, you know. I mean, the other night when we were talking about that Indonesian strange person, I started thinking about the root lady. Yes?
Well, the most important part of the story, you didn't answer the question.
What?
Did you get your period?
Well, for those of you who remember the root lady, you know what I'm talking about, right? You know what I'm talking about. Now, not a lot of white people been that close to a root lady and lived to tell about it.
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, and in the spirit of Thanksgiving, if there are any right-wingers or conservatives or Republicans out there who would like to check in tonight and tell us what you're thankful for, we would love to hear from you. And if you're good little conservatives and behave yourselves, we will pat you on the head and say you are a good little conservative. Headonradio.com. Are you all familiar with that? Head on, like in collision. Headonradio.com. Bob over at headonradio.com sent me an email. Mike, the subject line is shakes on a plane. Now, I mentioned to Kathy, I said, well, why didn't you come over that tonight? And Kathy said, I did a couple of months ago. She, you already did this. The last time some Muslims were, holy men were taken off a plane, right? Anyway, it's from Bob at headonradio.com. Shakes on a plane. Mike, sorry, I couldn't resist the pun, awful though it was. Anyway, the Baptists on the plane, if it were to happen then, would probably think a Hasidic rabbi was actually Amish and wonder if the horse and buggy was in the luggage hold. If you get a chance, tune in to headonradio.com. It's on the internet. Headonradio.com. Most of you are familiar with that. Regarding the conversations we've been having here about the draft and New York Representative Charlie Rangel's apparent desire to bring that up for discussion, reinstate the draft. Now, I have been going on the assumption, and apparently I'm wrong, that Rangel was not serious, that this was to force a debate on the unfairness of what we have now regarding the military. And I may be wrong on that one, too. We have an all-volunteer force, and according to what I read today in the New York Times, we need 80,000 people to join the military every year out of a pool of a potential pool of 16 or 17 million. Was that the number, or is it higher than that? So 80,000 is minuscule when one considers how many people are available. I said last night that as long as we live in on a planet where death and murder and blowing people up and war is still a viable option, as insane as that is, then there should be universal conscription. And again, what I was trying to do was attempt to sound ironic or maybe even wry or sarcastic or something. And I think I did say if we're entering the 21st century, which actually we're entering probably the 400 or 500th century of human existence, at least thinking human. Oh, never mind. Please don't. If you're an anthropologist don't send me a correction on that one. All right. Tens of thousands of years humans have been around, but since we date it from the birth of Christ, okay. If we're entering 2001, 2002, 2003, 2006, here we are, 6 years into this new century, starting the seventh or starting the eighth, however you count it, and we still bomb and strafe and murder and kill and blow up, then okay, let's have a military. And that was supposed to be an ironic kind of "you're kidding me" statement on my part, and apparently it just didn't come across. I am totally opposed to military conscription. How dare a state ask someone to give his or her life for something that is ridiculous? Such as damn near every war that the United States has ever fought. Yes, there have been some exceptions. Now, if someone breaks into your home, whether your home is your actual house or your city or your country, intent on murdering you and your family, then you certainly have a right to defend yourself and to fight however you want to. Absolutely, you're damn right. Vis-a-vis the Vietnamese, vis-a-vis the Iraqis, vis-a-vis the Palestinians. This is what happens. You know, when you feel like you have been invaded, you are going to fight until there's no one left. No one left. Chechnya. The list is endless. But to ask someone to die for an aggressive war that only will benefit a certain class within the society that says let's go to war, or within the society doesn't say let's go to war, That is an outrage. And the way it is couched in terms of patriotism and adventure and bravery is another outrage. It's outrage upon outrage. Every single American in uniform who is fighting in Iraq is fighting tonight for nothing, absolutely nothing. And I defy you to tell me what it is they're fighting for. Every single American that has died in that horrendous conflict, every single Iraqi that has been murdered in that horrendous conflict, for what? Now, you can make the argument that the Iraqis, among themselves, like we did, have as an option mass murder. Shia, Sunni, whoever else is involved, Kurds, Catholics, Jews, Baptists, I don't know. You know, if this is another reason I despise and loathe with every fiber of my being religion. But if this is what they want to do, fine. Why are we there? Why? For no reason. There is no reason. There is not a single logical or justifiable reason to have the United States military in Iraq, nor is there any justifiable or logical reason to have the United States military in Afghanistan or damn near any country that we are in. And I believe we have a military presence in 130 countries on this planet. And the question then comes up, why? It's to protect American corporate interests. It is to protect the illusion of American empire. Now, you want to die for that? You want to send your son or daughter? I would break my son's legs. I would gouge his eyes out before I would let him join a military whose function was what I just described. By the same token, my son and I would take up weapons and defend our country if we were ever attacked. And so would my daughters. So Charlie Rangel's call for debate about the draft, to me, was a provocative move on his part to get people, not people listening to this program, because we talk about it, but to get the average Jane and Joe in America to wake the hell up. 3,000 American families have given a son or a daughter, a father, a brother for what? And we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it. Oh, you and I talk about it. You know what I'm talking about. It's off. It's over in the corner. We don't watch the coffins coming home. We're not allowed to. We don't talk about the amputees and the double amputees and the triple amputees and the quadruple amputees. We don't talk about that. You see, it's unpleasant. We don't talk about 21-year-olds who are coming back with both their legs blown off. For what? For nothing. For the vanity and the psychosis of George Bush and Dick Cheney and this filthy, filthy Donald Rumsfeld. So when I hear Charlie Rangel talk about the draft, I assume he is talking about it from the standpoint of if we're going to follow a foreign policy that is this violent and vicious and atrocious, then everybody should have a hand, should have a hand in this game, and then the game will stop. It would have stopped a long time ago. It never would have started. And that is what I assume that Rangel was talking about. Threaten a draft, and all of a sudden people, the vast majority of people in this country may say, wait a second, draft? What, my son? My daughter? I'd like to have grandchildren. I don't want my son to go fight in some place so that ExxonMobil can make more money. I don't want my daughter to be blown to pieces by a roadside explosive device so that Donald Rumsfeld can experiment with smaller, more aggressive operational units in a combat zone he created. Hell no! Hell no! I want my children home. I want my father home. I want my brother home. And to me, that's what Rangel was doing. Come on, America, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up! But apparently I had it wrong, or I was misunderstood. But I got a lot of emails, sort of like Tom from Phoenix, who writes, with all the favorable commentary on liberal talk radio, including Randy Rhodes and Bill Press, about Charlie Rangel's proposal for instituting the draft, Tom writes, I have heard nothing about how the Democrats wimped out when it mattered, and now they want the public to rise up and protest when their sons and daughters and sisters and brothers are called up to serve. They are as bad as the neocons in using those who elected them to lead to do their work for them. Rather than laying their careers on the line for principle, they now want to move that responsibility onto the public. I say no draft and no more war as a means to an end. Elected Democrats who didn't speak out against the war early on should feel ashamed. I hear you, Tom, loud and clear.
Distant land. What if the enemy lies behind the voice of command. The sound of war is a child's cry. Behind tinted windows they just drive by. And all I know is that those that are going to be killed aren't those that preside on Capitol Hill. I told him, don't fill the front lines of their war. Those aren't worth dying for. And he said, roll with it, baby. Make it your career. Keep the home fire burning till America is in the clear. Just roll with it.
Clap your hands. Clap your hands.
Sometimes I'm happy, but wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Boy, you're outdoing yourself tonight, Madam Producer. Annie DeFranco and Richie Havens within the space of 10 minutes. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Let's do a couple of phone calls here before the break, starting with Kirk, who's calling in from Worcester, Mass. Kirk, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I was wondering if you watched CNN today. I was looking at CNN, and I saw something about Guantanamo tapes. I think it was a tape interrogation of prisoners at Guantanamo. Oh my! I was like disgusted at what I heard, that they were asking if they were. I think of they're part of Al Qaeda, and then the prisoners are saying they're not Al Qaeda.
Yeah. I did not see what you are referring to. No.
The story is listed on CNN.com. It's the first story on the top story list.
Okay.
I was kind of disgusted by it because I would prefer to see Guantanamo closed and the prisoners just let go. I mean, after all the torture has been done there.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh my God. As long as Guantanamo, excuse me, or Abu Ghraib, or any of these torture camps that the CIA and the DIA and Cheney and Rumsfeld have established around the planet, a couple of them on ships anchored. I know one is near Diego Garcia, an island, British protectorate in the Indian Ocean. They're all over the place. As long as one of those places exists, we do not live in a country that I want to live in. We live in a country that tortures and maims and destroys and humiliates other human beings for absolutely no reason. I don't care what kind of an excuse is given. These are monsters who set this up, whether it's Alberto Gonzalez or John Yoo or Dick Cheney or Rumsfeld. It doesn't make any difference. And as long as there is a Guantanamo or anything even remotely resembling it, we are as degenerate as anybody in Nazism or Soviet communism who sent people to gulags and prisons to rot after being tortured. It is vile. I can't believe I live in a country that does that. So I, you know, if you're suggesting that that these should be closed, I certainly agree with you. They need to go. Kirk, thank you. I'll take a look at that during the break. Thanks, Kirk.
All right.
I appreciate
Thanks.
You checking in. LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas. LaShonda, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a long time since I called in.
It has indeed.
Yes, I've had a baby and everything.
Ow, really?
I had my first son. He came 3 months early.
What's his name?
His name's Alexander.
Alexander. 3 months early. Is he home from the hospital yet?
No, he's still in intensive care.
Oh, is he okay? I mean, is he coming along? Is he progressing?
He's coming along. When he was born, he was 1 pound, 4.6 ounces.
Oh, my God. He must have fit in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. I had high blood pressure. Can you believe it? I'm like 30, and I got like high blood pressure like old people.
Well, no. Kathy developed that when she was pregnant for for Molly, and it was she also developed this what they call gestational diabetes. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You know, pregnancy is not the little easy. Oh, let's just get pregnant and have a baby that people think it is.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let me call from the hospital. I'm like, I want to call the Mike Malloy Show.
You're crazy. You are really crazy.
They wouldn't let me call. I was like, all right, that's okay. I'll wait.
So how much does Alexander weigh now?
He is close to 4 pounds now.
Well, he's going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to get him home. And, you know, I was sitting here today, the reason I was calling, you know, because I'm thinking about what the future is going to be like for my son. And I'm really astonished. They're talking about, you know, the economy is slowing down because of the housing slump. And I'm like, come on, you cannot tell me that the entire American economy is slowing down because people are not buying houses. I refuse to believe that.
They're mixing up cause and effect. I just read that today or something today that all the numbers that Bush and the Republicans had talked about prior to the election about the economy is good, all those numbers have been revised downward.
Yeah.
And now they're saying that next year is going to be hell economically. I hate these liars, LaShonda. I hate them because for people like you or me or whoever has a young kid and you start thinking about the future, start thinking about, well, you know, I've got to plan a little bit. And how are you going to plan when you have nothing but lies being fed to you?
Yes, exactly. You know, you don't really have a clear vision of, you know, what's really going on. It's the overplay for the underlay. I say it all the time.
I hear you.
You know? And this whole GM Ford thing now, that they had to get a secured loan and put the factories and equipment up
mm-hmm.
as collateral. I'm like, oh, my goodness, what in the world? What's happening? What is going on up there?
It's almost, you almost want to laugh so you don't cry.
Yeah, I guess Bush was in Detroit last week, and I don't know if he stopped at the crack house or what, but he went to the meeting, and basically they didn't get anything accomplished. They're like, well, you know, we think the president really kind of has a clear view, you know, that we're having some health care costs. And he's like, you know, yeah, we putting some stuff together in the government, and, you know, don't worry about that. We got health insurance covered. But
yeah.
It's a lie.
Right. Talking to Bush about economics, unless it has to do with his daddy and the Saudis bailing him out of another failed business adventure. Talking to Bush about economics is like talking to you know, a fool about Einstein. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's crazy. If they had just looked at his record with his own companies, I don't even see why you would put somebody in a position like the president. I'm like, did they drug test this man and run some credit checks on him? Or, you know what I'm saying? Did they holler at some of his partners that's like, you know, this dude is nuts, don't go into business with him? They just put him in office.
They did, didn't they? LaShonda, hurry up and get a picture of Alexander up so we can see it.
Okay.
And we got a break. Take care. Kiss the baby for me, okay?
All right. Bye-bye, Mike.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Have a happy Thanksgiving, too. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio Network. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Let's get this out of the way, Kathy. It's just sitting here and it's starting to stink up the studio. This is a Chicken Hawk Chuckle Nuts in Hawaii speaking on the assassination today of Lebanese industry minister Pierre Jamail. Now, from the sound of Bush's statement, it looks like Raisin Brain here is blaming Syria and or Iran for this assassination. But whoops, isn't Kissinger calling for help from Syria and Iran in the war against Iraq? And I know this is supposed to be the third Lebanese minister who has been assassinated by somebody with ties to Syria. That's the conventional wisdom is put out there by news media. Where are they getting the information? Was anybody keeping track of CIA death squads today? How about Mossad? How about Hamas? Anybody watching the comings and goings? Where was Negroponte today? Ah, but no, it has to be Syria. And oddly, this assassination of the Maronite Christian Jamail happens precisely at the moment when Syria and Iraq and Iran and Iraq have decided, okay, maybe it's time we stop fighting each other and fight the common enemy, which, as we all know, is the United States and Israel. And since the United States and Israel is hell-bent on not having a solution of the Palestinian issue, which is the genesis of all of this, since we are hell-bent on preventing a solution, now today I pick up the New York Times front page above the fold. 80% of the new settlements in the West Bank are built on property owned with titles, deeds by Palestinians who have been told, get the hell out of here. We're building settlements here. New York Times. So within a 24 or 48 or 36-hour news cycle, after all the bad guys have gotten together, Iraq, Iran, and Syria, we have an assassination of another fall guy. Okay, let's pick somebody and blow his brains out today, which will further destabilize the Middle East, get everybody pointing fingers. Ah, it's Syria. No, it's Iran. No, it's Hamas. No, it's Hezbollah. Maybe it's the CIA. No, it's Mossad. It just kind of stunned me today. I came in from running errands. Kathy said, did you hear? They assassinated another Lebanese minister. Cabinet minister. And my first thought was not, and I'm ashamed of this. My first thought was not, oh, the poor man and his family. My first thought was, didn't we just find out yesterday that Syria and Iraq decided to bury the hatchet, and haven't Iran and Iraq been talking about the same thing after their eight-year-long war in the 80s that we got involved in subtly with much subterfuge and lots of chemical weapons to the Iranian or to the Iraqis? The whole thing is just disgusting, and it's because there's oil. We don't do this with Uruguay, Paraguay, and Bolivia, do we? Well, maybe Bolivia. Uruguay, Paraguay, and, I guess there aren't too many places left. So the killing continues. The attempts to further inflame and destabilize. It's as though there is this evil force, either run by Americans or Israelis or Iraqis or of course they can't run their own thanks to us their own country, but it's like this force is just hell bent on causing a thermonuclear war with its origins in the Middle East. I know what that sounds like. It sounds like Armageddon. It sounds like Christian fanatics are behind this. But then you take a look at the Jewish fanatics who insist on living in land that they say God gave them. And then you have the Muslim fanatics who insist that that if you're not a Muslim, if you're a Jew or a Christian, you need to have your throat cut. And I still get emails from people that say, well, you know, Mike, we're praying for you because, you know, God is great. Oh, please. I get so disgusted about religion. I really do. So chuckle nuts. Somebody told chuckle nuts today that Pierre Jamail had been assassinated. They forgot to tell Kissinger. They forgot to say, Henry, we're gonna ice one of these people today. So back off on your talk about Iran and Syria stepping in to help Iraq, because we're hitting one of them today, which is going to further inflame and destabilize everything. So somebody forgot to tell Kissinger, or they told him, and the blood drinking old vampire just he forgot. Anybody got a hand calculator around? I can't keep these foreign policy decisions straight tonight. Here's Chuckle Nuts.
We saw again the vicious face of those who oppose freedom. We strongly condemn the assassination today in Lebanon of Pierre J. Mayol. He was a minister in the government of Prime Minister Sonora. We support the Lebanese people's desire to live in peace, and we support their efforts to defend their democracy against attempts by Syria, Iran, and allies to foment instability and violence in that important country.
What about Israel and the United States?
I call for a full investigation.
Of whom?
Of the murder, to identify those people and those forces behind the killing.
We'll get right on it.
I strongly believe the United Nations Security Council ought to act today.
How?
For the sake of peace, the free world must reject those who undermine young democracies and murder in the name of their hateful ideology.
Gee, who does that sound like? He says the United Nations Security Council ought to act today. By doing what? Who did it, George? Nobody's going to whisper in your ear. They may be whispering in Cheney's ear, but they're not going to whisper in your ear. Pierre Jamel. And after 24 years, Iraq and Syria agreed to restore full diplomatic relations. The separations that are the barriers, whether they're cultural or religious, within the Arab-speaking Middle East, were they to be exploited in a way that didn't involve bloodshed, would keep everybody apart anyway. But the policies of the United States in Iraq and the policies of Israel in the occupied territories forces these people to come together to work against the great Satan twins, the United States and Israel. And the blood continues to flow, and it will flow forever to the generation of the seventh son of the seventh son. It'll go on forever. And it's such a shame. It is so unnecessary, isn't it? There are two or three flashpoints in the Middle East that surely, although I don't know why I'm saying this, surely there must be people in Israel, the United States, Syria, the Palestinian territories, Iran, Iraq, who could sit down and say, this has got to stop. This has just got to stop. There must be people like that. Is it? Aren't there?
Why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. Forgetting where we've come from and all of this.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
We were young together, we were on the ball, we did not believe in the
21 past the hour. Back to some phone calls here. Mark is calling from Greenfield, South Carolina. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. I used to listen to you on XM, Air America there.
Uh-huh.
I canceled my subscription. Called them up and told them they got rid of the fairest and best man they had on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Now, what's on your mind tonight, though?
Well, I pretty much just wanted to call you up and tell you how much I liked you, and I'm going to get me a computer where I can listen to you. I have no computer right now, and I really missed you since those, I don't know, I guess Zionist hypocrites had a little something to do with getting you knocked off of Air America.
I don't think that was the case at all. I really don't.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think it had to do with my position on Christianity or Zionism or Israel at all. People who hired me at Air America knew exactly what my position was. And just because somebody is Jewish doesn't mean that they necessarily subscribe to the more acute aspects of Zionism any more than someone who says they're Christian subscribes to some of the more outrageous aspects of Christianity. Or I could say the same thing about Islam. I think, and I went over this before, but I think my firing was a result of some bad decisions made by a couple of freaks at Air America who had no business making decisions. That's all. And if I felt otherwise, I would be all over the place screaming bigotry and prejudice. I'd be filing lawsuits left and right. So, no, I've never felt that my firing had anything to do with my position on 9/11, my position on Israel, my position on Christians, nothing. I do what I do, and people who hire me know exactly. I've got, 25 years in this business. I'm not a novice. People know where I stand on these issues. So I just do not believe, and I don't think anyone could convince me, because I know what happened. I know why I was fired from Air America. I know what the lead up was. I worked the last year without a contract. There were people inside Air America who wanted to get rid of me simply because I was an expense, and they finally prevailed, much to their chagrin, because now the network is going bankrupt. I'm not saying my firing took them to bankruptcy, but it damn sure didn't help. So, no, I wasn't fired because I'm outspoken about the Middle East or 9/11 or going have Alex Jones on or anything of the sort. And I just don't want I really don't want people to think that. All right, Mark?
Hey, keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, sir.
And I'm listening.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. I hope you get a computer. I hope we get on the radio over there in South Carolina pretty soon.
Yeah, what people don't understand is that the business people, and I put quotes around that at Air America, never heard the show. I don't think they ever heard one of our programs.
I don't either.
One of the guys was out in California somewhere, and he only came into the office once or twice a week. The other guy was on perpetual vacation and just kept quitting and coming back and quitting and coming back. I don't think anybody heard the show, and we were on late.
Air America had the misfortune of putting people who invested in the company in decision-making positions, which was a terrible mistake. There were people who wanted to identify themselves as running a radio network who had as much experience running a radio network as I do of performing brain surgery. It was an ego thing. Hey, I run Air America. No, you don't. You ass. You're destroying Air America. And there were four or five people over the course of the 2 years that Air America was in existence before they went bankrupt that contributed to that. It had nothing to do with the quality of the programming. It had nothing to do with the personalities. We had a huge spectrum of personalities on that network. A lot of people say, well, they're all liberals. Not so fast, Sparky. There were a lot of people on that network who were might want to identify themselves as a Democrat or left-leaning, but they certainly weren't liberal. The reason Air America is in bankruptcy right now and probably won't survive past another couple, 3 weeks, is because of mismanagement. That's all. There was enough money that came in. There were talented people willing to do the programs. But behind the microphones, there were a bunch of rank amateurs who didn't know what the hell they were doing and still don't. And that's why Air America is soon going to be history.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Well, that little rant about Air America made everybody flee for the hills. We have a bunch of open lines here. If you have never called this program or would like to call tonight, now's the time to do it. The number is 800-989-1480. And program note, tomorrow night will be our last night this week. We are off Thursday and Friday. Thursday night, Thanksgiving, will be a rebroadcast of our Halloween program. And Friday, no, that's not right. Thursday night will be
a rebroadcast of our debut program on Nova M Radio.
Oh, I thought they were making the Halloween because it's a holiday. You know, just kind of a joke.
Well, let's just find out. That'll be fun. Let's not say anything. Let's just see who All tunes right. in, and they'll tell us.
Thursday and Friday will be rebroadcasts of our first program on this network and the Halloween program. I don't know in what order. Excuse me. And again, the rant about Air America is, I would like to set that to rest, though. You know, I was not fired because I speak out against, when they deserve it, in my opinion, the state of Israel, any more than when I speak out against the state of, I don't know, Australia. As far as I'm concerned, and I've said this a million times, a sovereign state's foreign policy is fair game when you are doing a political talk show. I don't care if they're Jewish or Catholic or tree worshippers or what. It doesn't make any difference to me.
Well, just to really put that to rest, one of the guys that fired you or was behind your firing spelled your name in an email, Mike Mallow.
Right.
And nothing to do. He had no
He's
idea
an idiot.
What you did.
Yeah, there were
no clue what we did.
They were just morons.
It was just, oh, he's costing money.
Yeah, right. He gets a paycheck, and his producer gets a paycheck. Quick, fire them.
They're on after dark.
They don't count.
Why do they need money?
Right. Sam Cedar had to deal with the same thing. Rachel Maddow had to deal with the same thing.
I think my favorite part was when they asked, why does he need a producer?
Right, right.
Why can't he just sit in Atlanta in a studio in the dark by himself and run everything?
So let's put that to rest, if you all don't mind. Because I just, you know, I get a lot of emails, a lot of people suggest, well, it's your position on 9/11, it's your position on Israel. And neither of those situations is true. Just they simply are not, okay? And again, if they were, this boy would be screaming bloody murder. Trust me. All right, back to your phone calls. Millie is calling from El Segundo. That's California, right?
That's correct.
Hi, Millie.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Well, anyway, you asked. I don't know if it was a rhetorical question. Is there a peace movement in Israel? I lived in Israel for.
Oh, there's a strong. Yeah, there's a strong peace movement. Peace Now. There's several.
There's several.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is, there's got to be peace movements all over the Middle East, where the Sunni and the Shia and the Catholics and the Maronite Christians and the Jews and the Druids and the Zoroastrians and whoever the hell it is, Millie, will just decide that it's better to live and to raise your family and maybe have a garden and some olive trees and a computer software factory behind you and open your business and be a doctor instead of blowing each other up.
Yeah, it
oh my
like
God.
That. It felt like that for a short, tiny little while and fell all apart. I have a tough time dealing with it and understanding and keeping up with it. But anyway,
now you lived in Israel, right?
I lived in Israel during the 80s between the first invasion of Lebanon and the end of the first Intifada.
Okay.
Just before the invasion of
you lived there in some bad times.
In the 80s. Yeah. I lived there in some tough times, and I actually saw, I mean, it's a small country, and you know people,
right.
And you know what happens to people. A very good friend of mine committed suicide after he was a pilot, after he invaded, did a bombing attack, and very sensitive guy, brilliant guy, and he ended up jumping off the building, and it was just sad. It's just... And everything hurts you. Once one person gets killed, you know people, you know their relations, and they're in your neighborhood. And when a bomb goes off, it's much closer there than it is here. You feel it,
sure,
in a way that nobody. I remember when Coca-Cola changed their flavor here. Everybody's protesting about Coca-Cola, and there in Lebanon, there was a TWA plane on the tarmac. A Marine was or a CB was thrown on the tarmac, and we're looking at Americans being killed in Lebanon, and Americans are protesting over the flavor of Coca-Cola. True story. I'm not that much joking.
No, I know. I'm laughing so I don't scream, okay?
Yeah, it's sad. People are so unaware here. It's a painful place to live. It really is. And it's hard. It's hard to... deal on that depth. But there's so much going on here. That is what drives me crazy about this country. Honest to God, you know, I have in the last 18 months, I had three friends die because they didn't have medical insurance. A woman with, died from a stroke because she couldn't afford to go see a doctor on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. A 25-year-old boy had artery clotting in his brain. Waiting on a line to get an MRI, and a 30, I think she was 34, 35 year old woman who had kidney damage, waited 4.5 hours in the emergency room and died in the gurney.
Oh my God.
This is the problem of America. And as bad as we say Israel is and a lot of other countries, you know, my daughter who was very, very ill, I could go the same day, go see a doctor, and she was close to death, but I had, you know, and I was just a simple worker, but I had medical insurance.
Where,
and it wasn't anything
where,
fancy.
In Israel?
I could see a doctor. Yes, because
yeah.
Medical insurance and being a working mother, I got an hour off each day so I can drop off and pick up my kids. I mean, it's a socialist country. I know there are problems wrong with it. We have a lot of problems. But I could leave. They were just, I didn't have to worry about dying because on the street because you're homeless. You don't have to worry about dying in a hospital because you don't have medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the richest country in the world. And it just troubles me, this latest news of the rich getting so rich so quickly. I'm a union electrician. I make a very good living, but I can't even afford a house in this city. How could that be? Statistically, I live in the top 95th percentile. I can't believe that I live in the top 95th percentile because I make slightly over $100,000 a year. But realistically, my situation,
mm-hmm.
because I'm getting taxed so high because I don't have a house, I can't save up enough money to get a house unless I want to live with 2-hour drive. And I refuse to do it because I walk to work. You know,
well,
I have that advantage.
Apparently, you're not benefiting from Bush's booming economy. It drives me crazy too, Millie, that people can be in that income bracket and literally not be able to afford a house. It's insane. And then on the other end of the scale, when you have usually these filthy Republicans who resist increasing minimum wage, and minimum wage, if you have two, a mother and a, or a husband and a wife working minimum wage, I know a lot of right-wingers will say, what the hell are they working on minimum wage? And they stay in school. Well, that's not the Republican or the right-winger's business.
No,
how someone lives their life or whatever misfortune or advantages they didn't take or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you have two people working on minimum wage, they're not making 20 grand a year between the two of them. What's the poverty level for two people? Higher than that. So
hey, you know what, Mike? I don't care what you do for a living. You should be able to live a decent life with it, because if the sewer backs up, you know, you're going to have a lot of problems.
Sure.
Dude, I mean, you have to get paid for doing the dirty work, picking up other people's trash, cleaning up somebody else's dirty toilet, and that is honorable work. And I don't care what anybody says. Not everybody could go to college, but this society runs on the backs of people who produce and serve other people. And just because you have connections and own a company doesn't make you a better person than somebody who cleans your toilet. I think it's more honorable work because schools couldn't function if they were dirty. The city couldn't function if there was poo-poo backing up in your toilet. Dude, you got to get paid for the hard work that you do day in and day out. And nobody in this country should die because they don't have medical insurance.
That's very true. That's very true, Millie. And I'm glad you stated it the way you stated it. Thanks a lot. We'll talk again, okay?
You take care. Glad that you're back on. You're my favorite.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Millie.
Bye-bye.
You take care. Michael is calling from New York. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Great to talk to you again. You know, I was so sorry to hear you guys.
Can you hold on a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to take a break, Michael. I just wanted to get you in, on, and then we got to take a break. We'll come back and talk. We have two open lines. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. If you want to get it said on this program, now's the time to do it. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio Network.
Everything is crumbling around me. Why does everything cost so much money? Could somebody please help out my family? My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can make enough money to take care of his baby.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, we were talking with Michael in New York. Okay, where were we, Michael?
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
You know, I'll keep the expression of admiration brief. I'm so glad you're back, Mike. You're the greatest.
Well, that's very kind, but that's not why you called.
No, but you know, I had to say it. I called basically to talk about the kinds of problems that the whole country's been going through. Your screener put it down to war on the middle class. I think that puts it fairly accurately. The other day I was saying to myself, you know, this country's just become a rotten place to live. You know, it really, things have changed so much, it's hard to believe. I heard you say, oh, the twin Satans, America and what was it? Israel, of course. I was suddenly reminded of one of the neocons, quoting Gene Kirkpatrick, the Blame America First crowd. I thought, oh, yeah, Blame America First crowd. I can call in and pretend to be a neocon. Anyway, no.
Well, you know,
joking aside,
it would be so easy, I believe this. I've said before on programs that I've hosted that I don't even like to talk about the Middle East because it's such a rat's nest of problems. On the other hand, it would be so easy to solve. But what is necessary is respect and cooperation. There will never, unless there is some, literally some sort of political miracle, there will never be respect among the majority, or between the majority of the Jews in Israel and the Arabs in the occupied territories, the Palestinian territories. That has been destroyed because of 60 years of mutual slaughter.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And there will never be respect for the United States among Arab-speaking countries or Muslim countries, for that matter, until the United States shows a more even-handed approach to the problems, the troubles between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So given those two realities, it makes me hideously and horribly depressed. Because, you know, I'm a common human being. I do not have a lot of formal education. I am not an expert on Middle East affairs, but I have read the writings of Jewish experts and Muslim experts, Israeli experts, Palestinian experts, and what I find in everything that they write, and I don't care, with the exception of a few radical nutballs like Meir Kahane. What I find is a genuine desire on the part of so many of the different identifiable groups in the Middle East to live in some sort of accommodation of each other so that they can raise their children, enjoy their grandchildren.
Yeah.
Like I said before, you know, open a small business, open a big factory, go to the beach,
exactly.
Sit around and have a cup of Turkish coffee. Oh, my God. But no, it can't be that way.
You know, Mike, it seems to me it doesn't come down to anything really metaphysical or very difficult to figure out. I read a couple of years ago in the Times about an Arab psychologist on the West Bank who had studied Arab kids and, you know, Palestinian kids and, you know, and also Jewish kids, and found that there was a psychology of death and killing. In other words, there was sort of a transmission. This was his way of putting it. I wish I could think of the name. In other words, the idea was that generations were being born into the concept of killing. For him, it was becoming compulsive.
Sure.
Almost addictive. And for both sides. And I think that's the problem. How do people get out of that, you know? I mean, when it's, the response is kill them, you know? In other words, something had to kill them. You know, how do people
get out of that?
Where's the political solution? Where's the metaphysical solution? Where's the philosophical solution? There isn't one. Break the psychology.
That's one of the reasons that I can't even talk about the Middle East without just feeling the pain. Listen, I have to leave it there. Michael, thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. You have a nice evening. Thanks a lot. I can't. I've said it before. I've said it over and over and over again. Nobody cares but me. I have Muslim friends here in Atlanta. I have Jewish friends here in Atlanta. I have people that I know on both sides of this hideous issue from the Middle East. Who actually live there, have dual housing, you know, live here and live in Lebanon, live here and live in Haifa, live here and live in Damascus, and it is unbelievably painful, and it's not my people being killed in these conflicts directly. Now, I know somebody can say, well, of course it is, because our people are being killed in the wars over there. We get sucked into these hideous, horrible wars. So in that respect, I guess so. But it's more than I can handle. I am not emotionally equipped to be able to discuss this Middle Eastern problem rationally with my friends anymore, the ones who are Jews and the ones who are Palestinian or Arab speakers. Because just like Michael said, you know, the culture of distrust and animosity and literal hatred is now so deeply ingrained. And yet there are still peace movements within every single one of these countries. In Iran, in Iraq, in Israel, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Egypt, every one of these countries, there are peace movements where there are people who are willing to let this horror go. But they are so in the minority. We'll be back after the break. Don't go away. We want to hear from you tonight. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. We will be off Thursday and Friday for Thanksgiving and National Shopping Day. And Kathy and I usually stay off the roads on that day and keep the kid at home. That'll be a good day to stay home and plant some of those little trees you bought, or what do you call them, shrubs?
Shrubs. Right. Those little trees are called shrubs. It's the first day of Giftmas.
Giftmas. All right, back to your phone calls. John is calling from San Francisco, listening on The Quake. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike. Haven't heard you for quite a long time. And just tonight, picking up for the first time, I realize why a lot of people might have thought you've been fired for the reasons they mentioned, because these are all of the reasons that I think Air America and the fake liberals are colluding with the military-industrial complex on every front. So it may not have been the reason, but I can see why people would find it plausible.
Well, sure, of course, especially as little. And here's the irony, is that my criticisms of the actions of the State of Israel are on a scale of 1 to 10, or is about a 0.5.
Oh.
There is no criticism, very seldom. Occasionally, New York Times, like they did this morning, will be critical.
I was going across the board, the 9/11 gatekeeping of the right. Fake liberals. I was talking their support for the everything that seems to be what Bush and Cheney and the neocons are perpetrating, the warmongering rhetoric against Iran, North Korea, and all those 67 countries that these mad PNAC madmen who were going for world domination in the Bush administration are using the same rhetoric now. People like Charlie Rangel, he's justifying the draft on the basis of that we don't have enough troops for Iraq or Iran or North Korea.
But John, is Rangel's, you know, I may have lost something here or missed something. I should say, you think Rangel is serious?
I absolutely think he's serious. I think that's the danger of fake liberals, the Democratic Party, as the one of the wings of the military-industrial complex. It's a Trojan horse. I remember during the Vietnam War, it was the fake liberals and the Democrats who were arguing, we can't get out of Vietnam. Just another year, another puppet government, a new constitution, new light at the end of the tunnel. Before you knew it, 10 years were gone. 3 million lives were bombed out of existence, and 60,000 people were dead just by these watersheds, these new developments that were just around the corner. And it seems the Democrats are now taking up that slack now that Bush has blown his credibility, that the neocons, nobody believes him anymore. And you have people coming out like Rangel, just as they run out of cannon fodder. Everybody says they're going to be hobbled in their mad plans for attacking Iran and all these other countries. And here comes Rangel to the rescue, saying we've got to have more troops for Iraq and to be able to threaten and saber-rattle Iran and North Korea. These were the justifications he was using, not some kind of a wry, sarcastic thing. He absolutely is serious, and I think the Democrats, you know, by dressing it up as equality of sacrifice or some kind of progressive things, are going to be able to establish what the people would be running with pitchforks and torches to Washington if this was proposed by Bush and Cheney. And I think it's really deadly because
it's my understanding though, John, that Pelosi has said no, forget about it.
Well, yeah, because I think the reaction came through very quickly, right. And she said it very very perfunctorily too. And so I just see that these are kind of trial balloons to see whether people are going to stand still for this. But you know, she also said before and after the election, we absolutely are not going to go for impeachment. Rangel said he's not going to go for as a head of the Ways and Means for any repeal of the huge tax giveaways of boondoggles to the rich. Barney Frank says he's not going to strengthen the anti-securities exchange laws, the Oaksley, whatever that law was that brought Enron's crimes into existence. It seems to me the Democrats are able to accomplish what the Republicans can't very often. And I was really interested in what you said about this latest assassination, because I think that the prime crime method is who benefits, you know, the CIA and Mossad and Israel. Hamas has got overwhelming support among Christians now. These fascists, really, Jemayel and his party were the perpetrators of the Shabra and Shatila massacre.
Well, that's right. The Christian phalangists were in cahoots with what's his name?
It was Sharon.
Sharon.
Yeah, and they're discredited.
That was one of the reasons I said maybe the possibility might be somebody from Hamas.
I'm saying from the CIA and the Mossad.
Well, yeah, them too. But everybody in the Middle East, John, everybody is suspect. Everybody. Every single time there's assassination like this. How many people understand that the Jamayo's family was involved in the slaughter of
a couple thousand women and children?
Yeah, right, right.
And the fact that his family is a supporter of, they called it the Flange because it was a fascist party that supported Hitler, and he had Hitler's picture, his father, on in his office. They're discredited. God. There's no reason for Syria or Iran to have anything to do with this. They're the ones that lose at the very point that they're making some kind of a consortium of understanding between Iran, Iraq, and Syria. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the only one who benefits are these neocons and these warmongers who want to break that up now. You know, there was no reason for them to do this. So the strife in Iraq, I think, is actually being incited by special forces of the United States and England. A couple years ago, or a year and a half ago, there was an SAS force that was caught by the Iraqi police, our own police, and they were dressed up with fake beards, Arab dress, and had the bombs and remote control in their cars. They were brought to the police station, and the British military went in and brought them out before they could fully expose what they're up to. I think the United States is involved in a divide and rule incitement of a lot of this sectarian violence.
I think you're right. I absolutely. John, I have to leave it. Listen, thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Hope to hear from you again. John has a lot to say. Zach is calling from California. Zach, welcome to the program. Where are you in California?
San Leandro.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I think that the guy John who just called believes that the Democrats and, you know, he sees, you know, shills for the military-industrial complex under every curtain. But I really don't believe that Randy Rhodes and some of the other people who spoke about this Charlie Rangel bill are doing that. And let me explain why I support it.
Okay.
I believe that a society that goes to war should spread that grief, that horror. You know, a democracy mm-hmm. should not consign that to people who are from Appalachia or small towns where there's nothing going on economically.
Or the so-called inner cities.
Yeah, exactly. Blacks and
or the barrios
and poor white. Yeah, and Hispanics. I mean, it's not all racial. I think it's more financial. But I would never say that it didn't hit minorities mm-hmm. more than, you know. But what I'm saying is, I think that Rangel understands that if we had had a draft as a policy, and that if in 2003 those senators and congresspeople knew that their children would be eligible, that we wouldn't have had this war. And
well,
I
tend to agree with that, Zach. I know that there is the argument that John makes. There's a third argument that Rangel is not all that connected to the power class, but still believes in a military draft. I kind of come down on the third way, your way, which is that Rangel was trying to make a point, and I may be wrong, maybe not. Maybe he's just a bloodthirsty warmonger who's in the hip pocket of the military-industrial complex. But you're absolutely right. We would not have gone to war. This little Bush bastard never would have done what he did if Americans knew that their sons and daughters were going to be drafted. So
I think if you take a longer view, I mean, I think John, the caller previous, was saying, well, look, you know, he's coming out with this now. But Rangel himself is positioned for
Zach, hold on a second.
Yeah,
hold on. I'll come back. I'll come back to you. Quick break here. We'll be right back.
Our mission in Iraq is a vital mission. The mission is one that will be that we obviously couldn't complete if we didn't fulfill our goals.
Oh my God! Yeah, kill them all, kill them all. Back to Zach, who's called in from California. All right, the draft. Let's wrap this up, Zach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have to admit that Rangel bring up saber rattling in Iran and North Korea as kind of a justification. But I think that he is a guy who, if you look at his statements, he tends to say stuff real off the cuff. And I mean, but here's the bottom line. I think Rangel has a lifetime appointment at Congress if he wants it. He's so secure in his district. And I really think that there are certain politicians who are like that. You know, we think they're all on the take. But I mean, this guy has security. He can do what he wants. And I think that explains Pelosi's answer too. Yeah, it was perfunctory, but she knows it's a non-starter. This isn't going to get voted for. Now, as for Rangel's no vote on his own bill, that's because the Republicans brought it up with no discussion, and they did it before the 2004 election in order to be able to say, look, we're not going to bring back the draft.
Right.
It was a preemptive move by them. But I think, to be honest, I think Rangel means it. I have to be honest. I think he means it about the draft, but for all the right reasons, if that's possible. Because of democracy, because nobody should be
okay. But you, I think you're starting too late into.
I understand, but if you think
an argument for a draft, you know, when you say for all the right reasons, there is no reason, none whatsoever, for the United States at this point in our history, to A, have a draft, B,
right.
have a standing army of more than maybe 50,000 people. And the reason for it is we still can command anywhere from 8 to 12,000 nuclear tipped missiles.
Right.
So
if
we have an enemy someplace, that enemy can be told in no uncertain terms, live and let live. But if you come in our direction, then your homeland will disappear in about 37 minutes.
Well, but what I'm talking about is projecting power. Like when they say,
well,
that
right. We have no business projecting power with the military.
Right, except for, I used to live in Barbara Lee's district, and she's been fighting this lonely battle for Darfur, and I just think that, you know, as far as, like, having a small army or whatever...
Won't work.
That won't work.
Two words for you. Somalia,
yeah.
Haiti. Won't work. You cannot send a military into an area where genocide is being committed and expect that you are going to solve it. You may solve it temporarily. What happens when you pull your military out? Well, it goes back to genocide. So what do you do? What? Develop democracy? Oh, ha, ha, ha on that one. All right, what's the third alternative? I know. Leave our military there for the next 30 or 40 years. No, I'm sorry. Military solutions do not work. Zach, I got to leave it there. I appreciate
you
checking in. The military is designed for one thing, to kill people and smash things. That's it. The military is not designed to build a nation, to bring democracy, to bring anything except death and destruction. That's all. That's all the military is for, ever, in the history of humankind. Now, because in the past 15 or 20 years, there has been an attempt by deceivers and liars in this country, our country, both Democrat and Republican, to try to paint the military as something other than a force of death and destruction. Why is that so hard for people to understand? When you send your military into someone else's country or a neutral battlefield of which there are none, there is none any longer, when you send the military, you are saying, we are here to kill your people and destroy your buildings. Period. Now, when resistance to that develops almost immediately, why do we sit back in the United States whining and blithering and blathering and acting as though this is all a surprise? We are there to kill people. Our people will be killed in return. The ratio of our dead to their dead will be very, very small. We will kill 100 of theirs, or 1,000, or 10,000 of theirs, or 1,000,000 of theirs for every 100, or 1,000, or 5,000 of ours. But for Christ's sake, don't anyone think that the military, anybody's military, is for anything other than murder, mayhem, death, destruction, apocalypse. That's all it's for. Now, having screamed that into the microphone, let us proceed. If in the year 2006 we are still projecting aggressive militaristic force on the face of the earth, there's something wrong with us. We don't need to be doing this. We have enough nuclear weapons to protect ourselves from everything other than an invasion from some other galaxy.
They're killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
When he says that, we play that soundbite several times. You can just hear the glee in his voice, can't you? Huh? They're killing Americans, killing more Iraqis. All right, I'm getting an awful lot of emails on Wrangle here. Let me give one for example from Jan, New York City. Mike, this is beyond stupid. Wrangell represents Harlem. No weapons are made there. Trust me on this, Mike. We in Manhattan do not benefit from the military-industrial complex. Wrangell was in, I think, World War II. Actually, it was Korea, I believe. Now I live in Midtown. No one from here is in Iraq. However, Harlem is providing cannon fodder. This needs to be debated. If people would support our troops on their SUVs, have to contemplate sending their kids. Well, I think that is the debate Wrangell wants. He just wants the return of sanity, in my opinion. Let me see what else. This is from Gene. My big problem with Wrangell, and thank all the gods his legislation won't pass, is that he overlooks the deep-seated innate cruelty, dishonesty, and greed of this administration. The opinion of the people didn't matter in the elections of 2000, the decision to go to war in 2003, the elections of 2004, etc. Bush has made signing statements a habit. He just add a signing statement to 1,200, and no rich connected child would serve. If this legislation passed, Cheney would rub his hands with glee. Problem solved, and he would be able to say, hey, this is the Dems' fault. Blame them. Perhaps Rangel is just too naive because the only healthy debate, as usual, is happening with the liberals. And just more and more and more and more here. So there really seems to be a debate. Well, it doesn't seem to be. I mean, there is, whether or not Rangel is serious. We've heard everything from 90s in the pocket of the military-industrial complex. He's a Republican light. He's a militarist. He is using trickery. He wants the debate. He doesn't want war. He wants the full spectrum of this society to participate if we are going to do something as insane and vile and immoral and filthy as go into someone else's country and start killing people and breaking things. I can't believe otherwise that Rangel is trying to make a point here. I'm satisfied with thinking that. If I were ever fortunate enough to have a conversation with him exactly face up in private and say, Congressman, what do you really mean? You know, and he would tell me, then it might change, or it might reinforce, it might change what I think. But, I just can't get past the fact that a lot of people in our time, that's going to piss some folks off what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, that in our time in human history, a lot of people still see the military as an honorable way to live their lives. I'm sorry if that pisses you off. What is honorable about joining an organization whose sole function now is to invade and destroy other countries who are not a threat to us? Will somebody please tell me what was the threat to the United States in Vietnam? What was the threat to the United States in Lebanon? What was the threat to the United States in Ethiopia? What was the threat to the United States in Serbia? What was the threat to the United States in Nicaragua? What was the threat to the United States in Panama? What was the threat to the United States in Afghanistan? What was the threat to the United States in Iraq? It just goes on and on and on. There was no threat. These were all political wars that had to do with power and greed and thrusting American hegemony against the rest of the world. This is not honorable. I'm sorry, folks. It's not honorable. It's disgusting. It's filthy. And it results in death and people with arms and legs blown off and children with no fathers and now children with no mothers and sons and parents with no sons and daughters. Goddamn war. Goddamn it all to hell. There is no justification for war. None. None. Not any longer. Now, I'm sorry if I offended you. This topic just drives through me like a knife. Every time I hear somebody stand in the well of the House or the Senate promoting death and destruction in the form and shape of a war someplace, I almost lose it. I want to do something or say something that will cost me my license. It may put me in jail. That's how it just rips through me when I hear this. I like to hear that. See, I always ask for right wingers or Republicans or Bush suckers to call in any justification for any war that the United States has participated in since World War II. Or better yet, since the development of nuclear weapons. This is insane. It's obscene. It's anti-life. It's pro-death. It's destructive. I don't like this topic. but we'll continue to talk about it. Let's go to Doug, who's called in from San Diego. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, it's good to talk to you in person. I've been listening to you since you started Air America. It's been a hell of a lot of time, but I'm a big fan of yours. And I'm just horrified at what's going on in the world right now. And I just remember you talking about the white phosphorus and in Iraq and how the people are being burned. It's just the things that are going on is just horrifying, and I just can't believe it. And I just wish it would stop. And Rangel, I called about Rangel. John kind of took my fire out about Rangel, but it seems to me that, you know, whether you have a draft or not, the poor are going to fight it. I mean, what's the distinction that's made whether people get drafted or not? I don't understand Rangel's position at all. And I think in the way things are in the world now, it's just lighting a fire. I mean, you know, it's putting in the public discourse, and it's making people think about it. And people, it's getting in with a step with this plan of, like, Bush wants to escalate 20,000 troops in Iraq. And I'm just wondering, where's this going to end? Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm just listening to you. I'll tell you where it will end. It will end with helicopters airlifting people out of the green zone, Americans and Iraqi collaborators. That's how they will be seen, in the same manner that helicopters were used to lift Vietnamese from the American embassy in Saigon as the North Vietnamese regular army was approaching the outskirts of that city. That's how it'll end.
Well, isn't it true that Syria and Iran have said they want us to stay?
Hell no. They want, well, from a standpoint of decimating our military, tying us down, the attrition that we are suffering, the bankrupting both financially and morally of our culture and our treasury. Well, on that basis, yeah, Syria and Iran would love us to stay. Syria and Iran just signed agreements with Iraq.
Well, Iran said recently that they're afraid for us to leave because it might cause problems throughout the region.
I don't think Iran has a damn thing to worry about from Iraq. Iran is 90,000 people. It is an industrialized economic powerhouse with a very well-trained, excellent military. Iraq is a country that has suffered now since 1991 with three war. Go back to 1980. It has suffered through 1, 2, 3, 4 wars, 15 years of sanctions, an absolute ending to their infrastructure, their medical delivery system, their health system, their sewer system. Iraq is a failed state, thanks to George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Bill Clinton. It is a failed state. It has now become a place that will incubate terrorists who will go out of Iraq and go wherever terrorists go to commit their form of murder and mayhem. So why in the hell would Iran be afraid of Iraq? Most of the Iraqis in power are Shia. The Muslims in power in Iran, although Iran is not an Arab state, it's a Persian state, are Shia. They're fundamentalists. So why would Iran want to be afraid of Iraq?
The Sunni outnumber the Shia, don't they? I mean,
not in these two countries.
Well, I think that a regional war would be pretty dangerous.
Well,
aside from that, isn't there some sort of talk about putting 20,000 more temporarily troops?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're on their way. They've already gotten their orders. They deploy, I guess, after Christmas. But they're coming from three regions of the United States. The argument is these are fresh troops, so-called, that are going in to take care of the normal rotation of troops coming out. But don't you believe it, Doug? I got to leave it there. Thanks.
You see a connection between the draft and the increase in troops?
Well, I don't know what I see anymore. Doug, I have to leave it there. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew for the program tonight in Phoenix, Arizona. The program was engineered by Billy Foster. Ian Huff answered your calls and associate produced the program. Thanks, guys. And our usual crew of reprobates, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, who's our webmaster at MikeMalloy.com, and our moderators there on the message board, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program, and podcasting and downloads of this program are now available at NovemRadio.com. And all of it overseen by She Who Must Be Obeyed, our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Back to your calls. Daryl is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going? I'm listening to this discussion, and it occurred to me, you know, this is what radio can be, and I think you're doing a good job. And I also appreciate the fact that you provide your callers a forum to sort of say what it is they want to say, whether you agree or not, and that's refreshing. Having said that, I think, you know, this idea that, Israel's foreign policy has somehow become sacrosanct. It's like, you know, to criticize the Israeli government is to somehow be anti-Semitic, which is sort of ridiculous in itself, given that, you know, there are lots of Semitic people in the Middle East, and not all of them are Jewish.
Well, it makes as much sense as a criticism of the United States government or government policies, which we do on this program every night, somehow makes me or the people who participate in this program unpatriotic to their own country, the United States, or a threat to America. It's the same thing. It's nonsense. It's propaganda. It's a way of keeping people shut up. The Soviets did the same thing. If you criticized the Soviet Union policy and you were a Soviet citizen, you wound up in a gulag someplace. So Israel certainly doesn't have, or the topic of Israel does not have an exclusive franchise on trying to stifle criticism. We've talked about this a million times. The twin pillars of what holds up or works against any criticism of Israel in this country is the very real sympathy for the fact that the Christian world, the Western world, allowed the ovens of the Holocaust to burn for 3 or 4 years until 6 million had died. The Western world, that is Great Britain and the United States and Canada and countries in South America, repeatedly turned away Jewish refugees who were trying to flee the Holocaust and sent them back to be gassed and burned. So there is that. The second thing is the Cold War value that Israel, the state of Israel, provided for the United States in the Middle East, where all the oil happens to be, or most of the oil. The Arab-speaking countries were backed by the Soviet Union, and the only ally we had at the time, worth a damn, was Israel. So the combination of a 50-year-long Cold War, during which Israel was our only real ally, and secondly, the righteous guilt that every single human being on the planet should feel while 6 million people were systematically executed because of their religious belief. Those both are very, very, very powerful and monumental mountains to try to get over to the other side. You understand what I'm saying?
I definitely understand what you're saying, but, you know, I will also say that, you know, given that whatever you believe, 300,000 or 600,000 Iraqis have been killed since the beginning of this war, and when you think about it, I mean, yeah, okay, this is a global war on terror, but relatively speaking, there hasn't been much of a peep, not even from Muslim countries. I mean, it's almost like war has become sort of this sort of acceptable political exercise where, you know, people just happen to get killed, you know, by the thousands, and we just sort of ho-hum. And, which is kind of why, you know, when I think about Charlie Rangel's this proposal for, you know, a draft, you know, I think, you know, hypocrisy is a powerful thing, but not even hypocrisy can persuade some people. I mean, look at what happened with, what's his name, the preacher who got caught with the meth prostitute. I mean, there were still people on the religious right, people in his movement who say, yeah, he's a good man, and, you know, even never mind the fact they've been protesting gay rights for, you know. Mm-hmm. But my point is, I think people in this country are just asleep at the switch, and I think every, you know, the people in North Korea, when they're eventually attacked, won't know what hit them. You know, their government tells them we're the good guys, and our government tells us we're the good guys, and too many Americans are just too willing to believe it.
Yeah, that's isn't that the nature of governments, though? Hey, listen, Daryl, this is great conversation. I'm glad you called, but I've got to leave it there because we're almost out of time. I do appreciate you checking in. I hope you'll call again, okay? Okay. I'm just thinking when Daryl was talking, you know, we are not a society that is really, really caught up in the concerns of a democracy or a democratic republic or self-government. We have become a society, or I won't say culture, society that's caught up in consumerism. I'm sorry, that's just, you know, it sounds so harsh, doesn't it? You know, you and I are caught in it. Everybody here, the goal is to fight against that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks a lot for participating. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovM Radio.